Christian greetings this beautiful Sunday morning. It's a blessing that we can have warmth on the inside, even if it's not warm outside. Hopefully your hearts are warm as well, and that you have the Son of Jesus Christ shining in your heart, giving you that warmth and comfort of His grace in your life. Appreciated and enjoyed the Sunday school hour that we could read and through the chapter of 1 John there, 1 John 4, and yes, trying the spirits and all of that. Book of 1 John is a wonderful book. He talks about love a lot in 1 John, and it's interesting how the book of 1 John and the Gospel of John seem to be companion books, and you can tell they're written by the same author, they have a lot of similar themes, a lot of similar emphases in both books. And I appreciated that to Brother Nelson on talking about obedience and then also talking about love. And I have thought that love is one of the greatest proofs that I'm a Christian. You ever thought of that? How easy is it for you? Just think about yourself and in your own life and in your own humanity. Would it be easy for me to love my brother, as the Bible would ask me to, without the power of Jesus in my heart? Well, the answer is fairly obvious, I think, for all of us in just having lived normal life and experienced normal life. We understand that we can't do it by ourselves. At least I can't. And so to me, love is one of the greatest evidences for me that I'm a Christian. Do I have love coming out of my heart for my brothers in the church? Well, yes. Well, I think that's a fairly obvious proof to me that I'm a Christian, because it doesn't come by myself. And I think that is also one of the reasons that John put such a great emphasis on love, is because it is such a great proof of salvation and renewal in Jesus Christ. So this morning, perhaps a bit more practical, a practical sermon related to the church, the doctrine of the church. And when I brought the message at home, I simply had titled it the Doctrine of the Church, Body Function, and then I had put practical outworking as the extension or subtitle of this sermon. Now, in the previous sermons that I had brought at home, I had tried to emphasize and make it very clear that this whole, all of the doctrine of the church is founded on and begins from the premise that I am a Christian. That's where it all needs to start. For this sermon, actually, this morning, for it to actually practically work out, I had feared at home that it was simply heard then as though all of these sermons were brought up to be preaching and teaching, then support for form and doctrine and practical applications in our life, and that it was not something more colorful, so to speak. But I think it does work out in that, but I want it clear here this morning that you must have a life with Jesus Christ. Okay, we're going to talk and try to actually give some defense for some practical applications we make to the Bible in our church life, but it must start, and that is one thing we as ministers and those of us who teach and preach must keep very clear and must remember to teach clearly, is that Jesus must come first and He needs to be in my heart. Or we're just going to end up to being like the Pharisees that Jesus rebuked as whited sepulchres. That life must be inside, or I'll just have a shell. And I've wondered sometimes, is that part of the reason that we struggle sometimes among us and in our churches and in our brotherhoods and in our conferences and however you might find it here at Cornerstone, to have an appreciation for practical application to Bible principle and doctrine? So life must come on the inside. It must be there, and you heard some of that coming through and some of the brief points that I had given at the beginning of some of the sermons before. Now, I also would recognize here, I would call us to think about something. You know, we have discussions sometimes about the Amish, and I have a great appreciation for Amish, and I have a lot of Amish relatives, interacted with them, worked with them. Some of the criticisms sometimes level at Amish brethren, I become a little bit defensive because I've also seen the good side of it, and I've actually seen Amish brethren who really are converted and living for Jesus Christ. For example, I worked with one young man, and you know, his parents just wouldn't let him do some things that others would do just simply because it was wrong. Then I appreciated that. You know, there are some who do think and have a desire for life in Christ. So then I had to think, you know, how do you think or how do I think about where I came from? You know, some of us here have changed and come from other churches. Well, how do I think about the church I came from? Okay, and perhaps it might be a little bit easier for us if we think about it this way. How do I think about the Amish? I'm just going to put it very practical and practically and bluntly. Do I have to be dumb to be Amish? I mean, after all, you don't have to drive a horse and buggy to go to heaven. Let's think about that a little bit. You know, doesn't that almost come through sometimes? Yeah, it sort of does. And so I say that for us to maybe think a little bit about how do I think about where I came from, okay? And that actually could have an influence about how I relate to what's here and how I think about what's here, okay? For those of you who enjoy history, if you want a completely secular example to actually flesh this out that maybe can help you actually look at where you are here, and that is simply, why was the American Revolution successful and the French Revolution not? And I can't go into all the details of that here this morning, but there's one key difference that I see, and that is the French were just out to destroy everything of where they came from. Get rid of the monarchy and let's just wreck it all. The American Revolution said, yeah, we don't want to be part of England, but there are some good things that we actually need. And if you look at the documents, the difference between what's governing Great Britain or the UK today and the US is not that much different. There are lots and lots of similarities, and that is one key to why I think the American Revolution was successful and the French wasn't. Now, there's a whole lot of nuances and a variety of other things you could go into there. That's just very brief. And so that is what I think we need to realize sometimes in our struggles with church life and in coming to appreciate where I am, is careful how you think about where you came from. You really need to take a good look at that. If you're just reacting, the results probably won't be good. 1 Corinthians 3:11. Let us continue just looking at some things here. For other foundation can no man lay than that which is laid, which is Christ Jesus. That was Menno Simon's favorite Bible verse. I hope it's your favorite Bible verse. Jesus needs to be central, and then he continues telling us some things about the building, and there's some action there. So we had looked at some of the practical preconceptions last evening, all members being Christians, reading and praying and maintaining their relationship with Christ. The practical results are simply brotherly love. That's why we give offerings. I want to help my brother pay his hospital bill, yes. That's why I show up when the roof blows off his house, because I want him to have a new roof. Yes, that's why I go visit them in the hospital, send flowers to them, give them cards, do a variety of other things. That's brotherly love in a practical outworking. John 13:34. A new commandment I give you, that ye love one another as I have loved you, that ye also love one another. Think about it. You don't just sit at home and say, well, I'm thinking about it. I have this principle all figured out. I can write about 2 books on it, and I can tell you all the ways to do it, but I'm sure enough never ever did anything about it. Well, how do I know that you really actually know about love? Somewhere it has to come out, okay? That's just the reality of the way it is, okay? Burden-bearing, offerings to help, medical aid, and we had gone over some of these, ministering. And also then we live out the Bible together. Yes, we really do. And that is one of the interesting and unique things about the Anabaptist, Mennonite, Amish outworking in our understanding of the church is that we live out Bible principle together. And I'd mentioned this earlier, that ritual and ceremony train the heart. Do you have any values here this morning? Do you have any principles here this morning? Yes? Okay. How are you going to pass those on to your next generation? And this is the thing that so often raises hackles among some people in maybe churches, and it does with me too sometimes. Okay? Well, let me say it this way. Maybe you would say it differently. But there's something that we so often forget. Ritual and ceremony train the heart. But do you know what tradition does? It transmits your values. And that is one of the big things that I see so many youth struggling with today. And I understand perhaps if it's divorced from the spirit and there's no life, I can understand that. I can also understand perhaps some reacting to it in our community where we would have a great concentration of Amish and some very, very strict Amish that are very, there's not a lot of life there. There's just a lot of tradition. I can understand why there would be a reaction. I have life in Jesus Christ. I can understand that. But the thing that is so often forgotten is that it is so easy to talk about principle and value that I have. And that is a discussion that some are having. And they say, well, I have all these principles and I have all these values, but I sure don't like tradition. No tradition. And then they wonder, why are my children not, why don't they like that? Well, you missed the central point and how you're actually going to pass it on, okay? For those of us who had been farmers or whatever, it's like saying I have a wonderful tractor and I got a beautiful wagon back there, but I'm not going to hook it up to the tractor because I don't like the pin. It's a central point, okay? How about pulling the pin on your semi-truck, Brother Nelson, tomorrow morning before your employee takes off? You say, pull the pin there and the trailer stays back there. That's what too many are doing. We can talk wonderfully. We can have it all laid out. But if we don't have that central little piece of connecting it, it's going to disconnect, okay? Tradition does pass on and transmits your values. Think about that as you as parents. So I value prayer, let's say. So we're going to have a family tradition of bedtime prayer time. Before we go to bed, we kneel down, we pray as a family. Well, that's a tradition. I remember one time, and actually it's very interesting. We as humans can't get out of tradition. We just simply can't. I remember a ministering brother when I was a young man preaching, and he said, some people, you know, talking about this exact thing. He said, so let's suppose you decide, well, everybody worships on Sunday, and I don't like that. I don't want to be like everybody else, you know, for whatever reason. But I want to worship the Lord, and so we're going to do it on Thursday. I said, well, very good. You just started a tradition of doing it on Thursday. So now you're, instead of a Seventh-day Adventist or a Baptist worshiping on Sunday, you're another denomination worshiping on Thursday. And that's exactly what happens. You actually think about that. We can't really get out of it. Practically, that's how it works out. So we don't just say that we love each other. We have a tradition of actually practicing the holy kiss in our churches. That's why it's important that we say we need to do that, okay? That's also why we wash each other's feet. I don't just talk about loving and being humble and submitting. I do it, you see. It's a tradition, okay? Tradition. So it's a barn-raising ethos, variety of other things. Some logic behind coming together and appreciating some things. Actually, let's just come to something more practical of our written standards here. And maybe we don't like that. Some people have them more specific. Some people have them less specific. I'm not going to tell you exactly where I come out on them all myself. But I do think that we need to be a little bit forgiving with each other on some things, sometimes with standards. The key that I think we need to remember in our churches and ministering brethren simply is this, that you need to speak to principle, and then you need to maintain what you spoke and how you have spoken to it. And you can look at many, many examples in history where they spoke to something and then they didn't actually maintain it. And one of the interesting things that happened in the Lancaster Conference, and Brother Aaron Shank, some of you will know him, would have been involved in this. Finally, he said, in my district, I can no longer, he said this to the ministers at their ministers meeting, to the bishops there, and he said, you know, he will no longer be serving. I think he gave him about a year or something like that, 6 months to a year. I will no longer be serving, cannot any longer serve communion to members in my congregation who are not compliant with a standard. And they had cut hair and a variety of other things in the church there. And he said, I just can't do it anymore. So guess what they did? Instead of enforcing the standard then in the Lancaster Conference, which would have probably been the right thing to do, I think we would all say that here this morning probably, they say, well, we'll rewrite the standard then. Okay, now, for some of us who say, well, we should easily rewrite the standard, that gives you a little bit of perspective, too, on why some ministering brethren are a little bit so slow on changing some standard things, is because they have a little bit of history and they're looking back and say, you know, that happened back there. And you're saying, well, okay. So we're going to look at maybe some things that maybe you wonder about why, you know, the Bible doesn't specifically speak to that. Okay, we'll get to that, hopefully. So since we're all together in one body, we're all to be doing one thing, practicing, reading the Bible, obeying God's commandments, there's an additional result, and we just have a united effort to obey the Bible biblically when it comes to the way we dress. And that's why we look the way we do here this morning. Have you thought about that? You see, it's all working together. So I'm willing to help my brother in love by giving some money. He's reading the Bible, wanting to be modest and everything else that goes along with it. The other practical result of that is we're going to look at each other and say, why don't we get together? We're stronger together. Let's just figure this out together and come to an agreement of how we can do that. So when it says in 1 Peter 3, verse 3, whose adorning, let it not be the outward adorning of the plaiting of hair, the wearing of gold, putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart. That's where it needs to start. Which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. For after this manner, in old time, the holy women who also trusted in God adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands. 1 Timothy 2:9, in like manner also, that women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broidered hair, gold, or pearls, or costly array, but which becometh women professing godliness with good works. And Romans 12:2, be not conformed to the world. So we see the principles in these verses. It says simplicity and simple dress, okay? That's just, you know, we can look at specifics, but really it comes out in being simple. It also says modest, in keeping with a modest heart. And I think modesty actually goes with more than just the way I dress. It can also be my house. It can also be my car. It can also be my hair. It can be anything. We should be known for modest living. I really think that's one thing that should come out of us as Mennonites. Not just in clothing, but in the way I live. To be really honest, that's something I've struggled with sometimes in our churches, is we dress very modestly, but then everything else goes. I can do whatever I want to and well please in business, even if it's a little bit shady. But sure enough, better be pretty modest and, you know, pretty plain when it comes to dress. And I'm all for that. I think it should apply to other areas of life too. How about historical example for holy women of God who trusted in God and in old time? So it is good and okay for us to look at some historical example. I don't do everything the way they did 100 years ago. No, and I'm glad I don't, okay? I'm glad there were some changes. But I want to have similar application. I want to have similar appreciation. I also want to live out the Bible like they did. And so why do I need to reinvent the wheel again? Why not take a little bit of example? Why not look and find some example? We also see from these passages nonconformity. Separation isn't just about being separated from the world. It is being separated to Christ. And that's the part we sometimes forget. It's both negative and positive. Both of them go together. If I'm only separated from, what am I separated to? It's like saying, don't think bad thoughts. Well, what shall I think? Neutral ones? No, think good thoughts. Don't have a bad attitude. Well, oh, have a good one. Okay. As the same thing goes in our separation from the world, we separated to Christ. We need to recognize each other's need for each other's input in our lives. We need to understand that we're stronger together. We want to live out these principles together as a community of believers. And the logical result of all of this is a functioning body, and it comes out in a minimum written standard of dress. You know why we get uncomfortable with messing with our standards sometimes? I've come to think about it this way for myself. It's sort of like our collective conscience. You ever think about it? What happens when you mess with your conscience and get a little bit to the edge of your conscience? You start saying, well, I'm not too comfortable with that. And I think it's a little bit the same way, too. You know, somehow we need to figure out where we are in simplicity, okay? Somehow we need to figure that out. And when we're starting to get to the edge of it, then we get a little bit uncomfortable. When we start messing with that, then we sort of have to think about, well, why is this change right? And why was that wrong? Or why are we changing? And our mind doesn't like to not have any good answers. And so we become a little bit resistant to that. And some say, well, it should be easy to change. And others say, well, you know, let's take it a little bit easy here. And that, I think that's why we find it a little bit difficult with our collective conscience in writing. Interesting. You might find this interesting. Pentecostals in Romania. I know this specifically. At least a pastor in one church told his sisters that came for baptism, don't use this material. You're not allowed. You can choose from this or this or this, but not that. And that was before communism fell. And they had their own standards of dress too, and they were specific about some stuff. It was rather interesting to me to discover that. There's always been churches that have always gathered, have had a, I call it, collective conscience. I don't know if we should go into this or not, but I think maybe we'll touch on it just a little bit. So the Bible doesn't talk specifically about the suit coat, so can I take it off here this morning? Would it offend anybody? Probably wouldn't, but why wear it? The Bible doesn't tell me to. I mean, you can't turn to chapter and verse for it. No, I can't. I'll just admit I won't. I can't, okay? Well, it's not very economical. You have to pay more money to do that. I mean, hey, why don't you go to the store and buy one and then just wear it? Well, why would we wear one at all? Well, you see, it typifies quite a number of things wrapped up in your suit coat, if you would be really honest about it. In the Old Testament, they were supposed to come with the best, and I don't think that firstborn lamb that was spotless was very cheap. Okay, it wasn't economical to bring that. You couldn't make an argument there. Now you say, well, my suit coat's not the lamb. Okay, I understand. The point I'm making is the argument from economics isn't always a good one, okay? So to me, that's a rather moot point. God always expected you to come with the best. Wherever I have gone, I have noticed they like to dress up to come to church. So why don't we dress up? And in our dressing up, we're sort of practicing separation too, aren't we? And that's a whole bundle of things wrapped up in the way that I do it. It's not one single thing, okay? It's a whole package, if you will, of things wrapped up in it. And that is why I think it is good for us to keep it. And also remember that tradition passes on your values. And so was just traditional. Okay, what value are you passing on with it? I think those are good reasons for us to keep it. How about the hanging veil? Well, we can go into all of that too and discuss that for a while. One of the keys, for lack of time, I think maybe we'll need to leave that, but I think it's good for us to keep the veilings we have and to be consistent in wearing them. One thing I've found interesting in Holmes County is that they like to wear this type of veiling for church Sundays and the hanging type throughout the week. Well, it's not very consistent, and I've also noticed that they like to be coming smaller and more lacy and covering less and doing this and doing that and doing the other thing. And I don't know if you're facing that here, but I know we are at home. But then I went to Romania, and they were like, looked at the veilings we have, and they say, "What's wrong with you? I can see right through it. You're not covering anything at all. Cover your head. That's what you told me you're going to do." And really was an offense. I mean, not just a little one. It was a big one, okay? What we need to do is have a speak to it practically in our church and then be consistent about it and speak to it and enforce it and maintain it. So this morning, some of the answer to some of this simply is Matthew 16, verse 19. Jesus said to Peter, "I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven." So why? I had asked another brother this question one time similarly, and we talked a little bit about the Amish. It helped a little bit, perhaps, for us to keep the answers even more easy for us to understand and apply. Raise a few less hackles on the back of my neck, I guess. It was just simply came down to this. He said, well, if you go to an Amish church, they have decided that's what you need to do, and so you better just drive a horse and buggy if you go to an Amish church. That's how they're speaking to their application of separation, okay? So instead of me carping and harping and carrying on for a while, if I go to an Amish church, I drive a horse and buggy and drive it with a good attitude and be a Christian and smile and be happy and love the church. He also told me something else, and this was rather interesting. We were talking about church hopping, and we were talking about standards and all of this and all of that and the other thing. And he told me, I think I know what would solve a lot of, and this was an older brother, okay, been in the ministry for a number of years. He'd come from the Midwest background, or he was in their church, and he said, I think it would solve a lot of church hopping if our proving for our members was not in our church where they're wanting to come to. He said, I understand this would need to be a flat line across all Mennonite churches. You'd have to apply this, he said. So you're proving. You want to come here. Very good. So we allowed, red cars, let's say. You're coming over here because you want a red car. He said, usually what you do is when another church changes their standard, we'll leave what he said. He said, you're proving. Go back to your church where you're coming from. You go to church there for 6 whole months, and you support 100%, support the standard with a good attitude, and if you want to come back, you come back and we'll take you in. He said, that would solve a lot of church hopping. I thought, well, that's interesting. Now, maybe some of you are thinking, well, I'm glad that didn't happen to me. Well, and it puts a little smiles on our faces, yes. Well, I understand church life and normal life and all of that, and it hasn't all been easy for me either, okay? But those are things we really need to think about, you know. If you have come to the church here, you came voluntarily, didn't you? Or did somebody say, you have to? You came voluntarily, right? You agreed voluntarily. Now support voluntarily. And at home, I use this example. So what's wrong with print dresses? We require solid color. And I told the church nothing. Our standard just says solid color. So that's where we've kept the line, with solid color. So what's wrong with print? Nothing. If we would come to church here, my wife probably would wear a print dress. I don't have a conscience against print, okay? But I do have a conscience against disobeying my church, so we're not going to do it at our church because, you know, we're not going to do it. I used another example at home, and I think I will here too, because maybe it would help us to understand some things connected with all of these different and various things that we struggle with sometimes. We change a church standard at home about something, and I just told the church I don't, maybe I shouldn't have been so blunt, but they understood by the end. There's something written into the standard that I don't think should be there. And in our standard, it had not said that we need to close our top buttons for church services. And now it does. And I told them I don't think it should be in there. We had said, we encourage you to close your top buttons for church services, especially when you have part in front. But it wasn't written in. And I liked that. I was supportive of that. Why? And I said it this way. Well, you see, the top shirt button for me, yes, I understand the biblical principles and all of that, and we need to have a various, you know, discussion and all of that, and I understand how we come out where we do. I understand that. However, I think the standard should be of a minimum, okay, and then we maintain what we have. Let's not add to it. The standard is good. Let's just maintain and support what we have. And it also brings it up that when we have a council meeting, we always need to go over that, talk about it, and all of these things. It needs to be read, and it raises it to a higher level, and now it's also expected that we discipline for that. And it's just, to me, was an extra, okay, that we don't need. So come home from Romania, and that's in the standard. Now what do I do? Well, I could set about rattling a few, making some noise, okay, and so we need to change this. Or I can submit. After all, it's just a couple hours, and I did it anyway, and so what's the big deal? Why don't make a big deal? It's just a top shirt button, after all. And submission, when do I need to submit? Well, if I always submit when I want to and when I agree with it, then I'll never submit when I don't agree, okay? And also, you see, Romans 14 says to honor and respect each other's conscience. So some brethren had a conscience. Some brethren, to them it was important. To them it would be an issue. Some just willing to submit to their conscience. Well, we're going to become legalistic then. We're becoming formal then and all of this. Well, but I also value brotherhood peace. And maybe someday they'll say to me, well, Brother Owen, you have shirt button issues in your life too. That's just how it works out in church life, okay? And then I'm coming to them as a minister saying, well, you got to submit. And they say, what was that about the shirt button? You see? And yet we don't think about it that way sometimes in our churches, do we? I would rather have peace in the church and be a light to the world and be able to tell them, come to us at Zion or Cornerstone. We love each other. We submit. We're getting along. And this is wonderful church life. I would rather have that and the love of Jesus in my heart and close my top shirt button than carp over it, okay? And there's too much of that happening in our world today and in our churches today. It's just that way. How do you see loss of appreciation for living out the body, for living out Bible principles? How do we see that loss? Well, we can say, well, but you're not wearing the, okay, this, that, the other thing, you know. It's, you know, they're not wearing the suit coat and got the top shirt button open now. That's, you know, they're losing that. Well, that's some of it. You know, I've seen it happen. Somebody I grew up with, in fact, they're younger than me. They've chucked a whole bunch of stuff that we stand for here this morning. I've seen his wife that used to come to church and be a member where I was and, you know, was under my leadership. And I've seen her come around with a ball cap on. That's fine now. I'm like, whoa. Everything else, you know, and it was just in a matter of very short time. How is that justified? What happened? Oh, well, they lost appreciation, is that right? Well, there are other things that you see happening that I have noticed in our churches that is happening. Less willingness to help bear each other's burdens. So instead of a brotherhood sharing aid plan, we need to go get commercial health insurance to pay my bills. I've seen it. That's what happens. It's not just a loss of dress. It is also a loss of brotherhood and willingness to help in the brotherhood. That goes along with it. No longer greeting each other with the holy kiss, oh, big deal. No longer washing each other's feet, oh, big deal. That's all part of the package, you see. It goes together. Loss of brotherhood cohesion. Well, we got unity, but not uniformity. Well, uniformity is also evidence of your unity. It works both ways, you see. Loss of simplicity and modesty, not just in dress. Loss of a conservative life and practice based on Hebrews 11, verse 13, and 2 Corinthians 6, verse 17. And this is often evidenced by a shift from conservative thought and practice to a conservative theology. And there's a big difference. It's a shift from obedience to the Bible to actually just now talking about it in theory. And that's what is happening. All you need to do is read the history of the Lancaster and Conservative Mennonite Conference and to look at EMU today. Those are three sources you can look at that exactly model that what has happened. So don't try it again, okay? Don't go down the same path. The evidence is there already. You'll end up at the same place. Here's some wrong thinking about a written standard. You might want to think about dualism connected with that too. Well, it's only the heart that matters. Precisely. That's why you protect it. Brother Nelson's going to plant some corn and some of the rest of you too. How about he says, well, it's the corn I want where somebody didn't figure out how to get rid of the husk. I mean, why'd I have to run that through the combine after all? I just want the corn. Get rid of the husk. But that's why corn has a husk, is because you want the corn, okay? I want a spiritual life, so I protect it. God's people have done that. All you need to do is read the whole book of Genesis, the whole Old Testament, and look at some of the specifics God tells them about why he's taking them captive. And some of it's connected with their dress. You might not like it. We might not enjoy it. But that's reality, okay? Read the Old Testament. Well, let's stick to the core issues. Only stick to those. The only real salvation issues. Yes, well, yesterday my wife asked me to wash the dishes, and I asked her, is it a divorce issue? I mean, really? But that's how we act with God sometimes. No, I did it because I love her. I got that from a talk from someone that Merle at Faith Builders. Let's only stick to principle and application, after all, only introduces legalism and strife. And here's something that some of us fail to get. The Bible says in James 2, verse 26, For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead. Let's change the words a little bit. And I think we're not doing violence to the verse. For as the body without the spirit is dead, so principle without the application is dead also. We'll let it there. Okay, fine, so then let's just, everybody, we just preach principle. Brethren, stop the standard stuff. Preach principle. Everybody, you have the principles now. Now go out and apply them in your own home. Well, that's a Protestant approach. Actually, Judges tried that, and it says here, in those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did that was right in his own eyes. And it also takes out the teeth of why should I, as a brother, be able to speak to you about anything in your life? I mean, you're being covetous. Oh, now hang on here. That's a principle. Very good. But how do you know I'm being covetous? No, now you start becoming specific. Whoa, 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 stop. You see, it takes the teeth out of everything. You say, teeth, we don't like that. Well, practical outworking then, if you will. In the new conservative or liberal thought, Melvin Layman coined the term the new conservative. I actually call them the new liberal because their thinking largely models what you see has happened in the 1960s and 70s, and we see the results of it today in the Lancaster Mennonite Conference, and you can also see that in Conservative Mennonite Conference, and you can also see it with the efforts at EMU. And some of these I had mentioned, and I got this quote from Chester Weaver, and it says, here was a new conservative's thought. They do appreciate traditional practice, but they don't just buy in. In other words, they want to sit there and toy with it for a while and think, well, you know, let's toy with it and twist it and let's change it and let's turn it a little bit so to be more acceptable. They don't just reject it outright. Well, the best way to attack Mennonite values is by attacking Mennonite symbols. That's a quote from Chester Weaver. They reject authoritarianism without relationship. And my question to that was, well, so what's new? Maybe I'm being too blunt, but let's just keep thinking here a little bit. They like to respect other Bible-believing groups, so why all the walls? Well, I don't think there's a wall between Bethel Fellowship or Zion or Pilgrim or anything like that. I mean, I'd go preach at a Mid-Atlantic church, and if they would ask me, I'd preach at other churches, sure would. I don't feel any walls. I just associate with Zion, okay? And I can appreciate what I see here at Pilgrim. That doesn't mean I don't support at Zion, okay? Let's be mature in our Christian life and thinking. Young people, you need to think about some of these things. Well, we value Christian education. Well, this is a big one. They see education as a mission field. But they forget it's Jesus that makes a difference. When Peter was in Acts 4, verse 13, they saw the boldness of Peter and John and perceived they were unlearned and ignorant men, and they marveled and took knowledge of them that they had been with Jesus. Focus on Jesus, not on your education. I discovered an interesting little statistic about Mennonite Church USA. And I'll just give it to you and let you do with it what you will this morning. You can find it in the book, signs, road signs for the journey. As education and income increased, there is a parallel decrease in interest in outreach and mission work. They directly affect each other. And I had to wonder about that one. You say, well, they might just stay home and give money. No, they're not willing to do that either after income increases. I'll just let you have that one and think about it. It's a challenge for us as Mennonites. Yes, yes. Believe that separation from the world begins in the heart and affects every area of life and not just arbitrarily few selected areas. This is what the New Liberal believes. Well, very good. But from whose point of view? See, these are some questions that so often many don't stop to ask. Longs for meaningful Christian community as a basis for growth and meaningful mission activity. So what's new? Get involved. Support where you're at. Find your fulfillment. Reach out. And here's a quote from Chester Weaver in his discussions. And he said simply this, a lot of what we see, or at least in his discussion, he said some of the questions, some were attacking him a little bit and pushing back at some stuff he was saying. And he said, he just simply told them, your questions show a distinct and a deep historical understanding and perspective. In other words, the questions you are asking show Chester Weaver you don't know your history. Or you would have the answer already to the question you're asking. I'm not meaning to be just a diatribe, but it is a concern of mine. Yes, some people at some places label me a liberal, others label me a conservative. Depends where I'm at. What do I do then? Not know where I'm at? No. Well, for the new conservative, as Brother Lehman would have mentioned them, they need to build a sustainable culture. But here's the thing that they so often forget, that values are carried forward by tradition. And he commented that I'm not sure that they are building that. In other words, they're forgetting that. So you want tradition. But here's the interesting thing. They're tilted. The new conservative, as he labeled them, says they're tilted toward tolerance, away from institutional authority, and they will struggle with a structure that they need to move their ideals forward precisely because they are against tradition and because they don't want authority. But once they see that they will need to have some authority and some tradition to move their ideals forward, they're going to be right back to where we are, close to where we are today. So my question to them simply would be this, and to you as young men sitting here perhaps thinking this way, is why are you reinventing the wheel then? I mean, that's a reasonable question. Also realize that the argument for relevance to society and making it easier for those to come in has been tried before. It's precisely and exactly the same argument that took other conferences in the past 40 years down the exact same road. I brought this book up here, and I will put it in the back. You can just look through the pictures, and I will let you chew on those pictures on your own. Not every church needs to do everything like you here or like me, or like the Church of Zion. But for them to be biblical and sustainable and to have transmittable values and ideals, they must speak definitely and in practical terms to their manner of life and their manner of dress and they must enforce and discipline to maintain their practical directives. There are churches, and if we want to just use these terms, I will. There are churches that are more liberal than what Zion is, that I respect precisely because of this. They have spoken clearly, and they're disciplining and maintaining. And their attitude towards life and their attitude towards church life is very similar to ours. And I think that's one of the keys in our churches. Be clear, that's why I say I'm not for a lot of things in the standard specifics. But I am definitely for maintaining what's there. And I'm slow to change what is there. Because so often we fail to answer the question, so often we don't have a good replacement for what we're changing, okay? So I would just, and an object lesson, something that you can think about in your head up here, is simply this. Think about a sandwich. Here's what so many people like to do with church life. So if I'd have a sandwich and I would give it to Brother Nelson here this morning, it comes to him as a package. It's going to have a few things on it. Some bread, some meat, some cheese, maybe some lettuce, I don't know. But it's a package, right? So he takes and he eats and says, "Thank you very much, Brother Owen." Now, you might be sitting there thinking, well, but I could put peanut butter and jelly on there. And I could have roast beef, or I could have chicken breast, or I could have, you know, I don't like the lettuce, take that off. Okay. But if I would give him the sandwich, here's the thing that we need to understand in our churches. I give him the sandwich, and he says, "Get rid of this lettuce." Okay, big deal. Okay, so it's lettuce and a sandwich. Okay, maybe we have some lettuce in our churches too. We say, "Well, let's get rid of the lettuce." Okay, that's fine, but the sandwich is no longer the same sandwich. That's the reality of it. You say, "Well, big deal, it's just a lettuce." Yeah, okay. But recognize it's not the same sandwich. Here's the other thing that so often happens. Okay, so then, oh, well, some people don't like roast beef, some don't like tomatoes, some don't like lettuce, some don't like onions, some don't like, okay. It's a whole list of things. And some don't like 2 pieces of bread, they like 1 piece of bread. Some people don't like bread, they like a piece of flat bread. Others like wheat, and others like white. And, oh my. Okay, so here's the principles. Carbohydrates, protein, and fiber. Very good. Okay, so we could have a sandwich building board up here this morning. All of you could file by, and you could have your own sandwiches. Now, here's the thing that dads so often miss. Young fathers, when they start down this road of questioning a lot of things and wondering and all this, you know, okay, it's just simply this. Why did my son, why did he? Okay, so you got the principles, fine. Son, you need to build a sandwich. Make sure you have proteins, carbs, and fiber. Build a sandwich. You got those principles? Yes, daddy, proteins, carbs, fiber. Grandson comes along and now he's not wearing a suit coat, no, very small covering, lots of other things you want to plug in there and whatever else, okay. Once upon a time now, you take your grandson home to grandpa's house, and this is what happens in our churches. Goes home to grandpa's house and he says, okay, well, and grandson's sitting there looking, and they might not say it, but this is what's happening in their mind, okay. There's grandma. Big covering, cape dress, all of these other things. And they go to church and they hear preaching very similar. And, oh, grandpa's real concerned about spiritual life and praying and all of these things. And, oh, well, dad's the same way. But then he goes home to his church and a lot of things where we don't need to do them and pretty close to the world now. And boy grows up and he says, well, if dad could do all of those things and be a Christian, well, Our dad was saying, "Oh, son, careful here. This is right the line. We're right at, you know, right at the line. Don't you dare go across that line." And the son says, "I found a girl that I would like to get married to, and she's not wearing a covering." "Huh. Oh, it's just the principle." "Yes, very good. Proteins, carbs, fibers. Yes, she's got that in her heart. She loves Jesus." And he comes home, instead of a sandwich building board, now he's got a charcuterie board filled with nuts and grapes and all the other kinds of things and meats and cheeses and stuff. And dad's like, "Son, what's the problem? You need to build from this board." And he says, "Dad, I got the proteins, carbs, and fibers. What's wrong with you?" And that's what's happening. Simply because we don't think. Now, you can't think yourself into heaven. Understand that. But I think that's what's happening too often in our churches. As I said before, you must have life in Jesus Christ. And not all Christians across the face of the world are going to look exactly like us. I have met plenty in my travels, but their life and attitude is very similar to us. Jesus said, "And I say also unto thee that thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it." You want to be part of a successful organization and work? Join the kingdom of God and the church, the bride of Christ, and be faithful to it. And yes, this is part of it. The thing we so often forget sometimes is it's a package deal. It really is. And when it all works together, it's so beautiful. It can be so beautiful. And it's helped me in my life, and I trust it has and will help you as well also. Let's kneel for prayer.